What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Warrior Soul Podcast, and this is going to be the first ever episode of Warrior Health Talk. Now, what is this? This is going to be a weekly segment where my brother, Matt Cooper, and I get together and talk about the latest things in terms of health, fitness, and performance. And what we want to do here is just to get you some good information. This is information that you're not going to get from like bodybuilding.com or some of the main fitness sites and things like that. What we want to do is break the science down into simpler terms that you can understand. And we want to help you to take these things from theory to practice and to help to implement them in your own lives. Taking care of your body and your mind is the cheapest and most effective way of improving your life. And that's what we're about here on the Warrior Soul Podcast, is helping you to live your best life, helping all veterans, helping all patriots, and anybody who is willing to listen to us. We want to help you to live your best lives. So before we get into this, I just want to say a word about our sponsors, F-Bomb Nutrition. They make these amazing portable packets of... They're just starting in a lawnmower outside my window, so I'm going to speak up a little bit. F-Bomb Nutrition makes these amazing portable packets of good, healthy fats. They've got some awesome coconut oil, MCT oil, olive oil, avocado oil, but they've also got these really delicious nut butters, macadamia nut and coconut butter. And they've got sea salt in there, and some of them have a little bit of chocolate, and they're so good. Now, it's really hard to do a ketogenic or paleo diet if you are constantly on the move, or if you're in the military and you're out in the field a lot, or if you're working on a construction site, or you're out and about. You can't sit in an office and open up your jug of coconut oil and pour it over your food. These packets put access into your hands to good, healthy fats whenever you want them to, whenever you want them. And they've got some really high quality stuff. So check them out at www.fatissmartfuel.com. And as always, this podcast is brought to you by Warrior Soul. We make amazing clothing for veterans and patriots, and we provide information, tools, tactics, and products to help people to live their best lives. And so if you want to check us out, head over to www.warriorsoulagoge.com. That's A-G-O-G-E. And you'll find some amazing content to help you with your training, to help you with your nutrition, to help you with your productivity. You'll find all of our podcasts, all of our videos, and some other amazing stuff up there in our Warrior Marketplace. So check that out if you want. And with that, let's get into this episode of Warrior Health Talk.
This is Chris Albert, and I'm here to remind you of one thing. Someday, you're going to die. Now, that's not some morbid statement or scary idea. It's solid fact. Your time here on this earth is limited. And you need to be reminded of this as much as possible for one simple reason: to live your best life while you can. This is the Warrior Soul Podcast.
Matt, we have an action-packed show today for everybody out there. What we're going to be talking about today are protein powders, what protein powders you should look for, what you should look for in your protein powders, and what protein powders could be the best for you, and whether or not you should use protein powders, for example. You know, that's a big thing people don't talk about. Well, some people talk about it. I think Matt and I talk about it a lot, but do you even want to use a protein powder or anything like that? We'll be getting into some of the dirty stuff behind the supplement industry, because Matt was an industry insider, and we'll be talking about whey versus other types of protein. And then we want to get a little bit into the McGregor fight with Mayweather and talk about why Conor McGregor gassed. Sorry, I can't talk today. So, Matt, let's lead it off, man. Do you take protein powder?
Yes, but it's not what you think. I actually take a collagen protein powder. I do not, and that comes, by the way, in small amounts. You're getting maybe 6 grams of protein in a scoop. I do not take conventional protein powder, and I do not take the protein powder that I use as a post-workout.
Now, I also take collagen, and I just wrote an article about collagen, but and we'll get into that in a second. But why do you take it? Why would you take a protein powder in the first place?
So why most people listening are probably taking a protein powder is for recovery, muscle growth, maybe fat loss or meal replacement. And, you know, so their husband won't leave them. They it's looked at as sort of a foundational supplement. And that's why most people are going to take a protein powder. Why I take the collagen protein is mainly for general health. It actually helps with anti-aging, immune function. It helps with bulletproofing my own joints, ligaments, things that are made out of collagen. And it helps with hair, skin, and nails. So really not the conventional reason to take it.
Yeah. And definitely want to get into why that is in a second. As far as whey protein, when we think of whey protein, that's probably the most popular protein out there. Are there any reasons why anybody would want to take a whey protein? I have a few in my mind, but what do you think?
Sometimes if someone's maybe on a special diet, like a hospital diet, or where they can't eat solid foods, or maybe they're vegan, maybe they're vegetarian, they want to get a protein source in. I'm not saying I am recommending these, but these are a few reasons why someone would want to. However, other than certain populations that can tolerate dairy a little better, or the student athlete population, for those people, I'll recommend a grass-fed whey. I tend to not recommend taking protein powder. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And this is the thing for those of you out there, the biggest reason why you would take a protein powder is not actually for the protein. You would take it because of the insulin spike. The insulin spike that you would get during a post-workout phase that would enable your cells to open up a little bit. And people don't realize this, but whey protein powder is actually highly insulinogenic, meaning it's going to cause a spike in your insulin levels. That's the hormone that comes out and that delivers nutrients throughout your body and that helps to keep your blood sugar at baseline. Or bring it back to baseline. But whey protein itself, I don't take it much right now. I used to take quite a bit of it. I would take like 3-4 shakes a day. I would have them on constant order from bodybuilding.com or some of the other supplement sites that were out there. And it's got some good things and bad things in it. It's got some awesome amino acids in it. A lot of whey protein has L-glutamine in it, which is really helpful in rebuilding your intestinal lining after bouts of inflammation. And it helps to keep those enterocytes, the places where you actually absorb nutrition in your intestines, from becoming overly inflamed. But the problem with whey protein, as I see it, is that one, a lot of people rely on it too heavily. And two, there's a lot of kind of extra stuff that you can tend to get in whey protein that's not going to be really helpful for you. So if you're looking at actually taking a whey protein, the big things that I recommend, and I know that Matt recommends, are one, I would go for an isolate rather than going for another type of protein. And the reason why I'd say that is because you're going to want to get those other milk solids taken out of it. And number two, as Matt said, I would opt for a grass-fed whey protein if you're going to take it. But understand that it's not just something that you're going to take that's just raising your protein levels. The main reason why you would take something like this is to create an insulin spike. Do you have anything to say on that, Matt?
Yeah, definitely. I would say why, you know, you could also potentially get your insulin spike if you needed it for storage reasons from carbohydrates, you know. I think a lot of people, there's a concern with protein powder when it's dairy source that are you even going to absorb it, honestly? Like, how much of that protein is really going to be utilized versus how much of it's going to be deposited in your body at a cellular level? What remnants of it are going to remain in the gut? And I think the main concerns, so I don't nerd out too much, are just, is it going to cause GI distress? If you're someone who needs to not be, if you're someone who needs to be on for some reason, like what you would call a low excitotoxin diet, meaning like if your nerves are very excitable and you want to kind of detox from that, getting off dairy and not doing it day to day is going to be key for that. And that would apply to populations or people who have a hyperactive mind, difficulty focusing, people on the OCD, ADD, autism spectrum disorders. So I may not be speaking to everybody there, but it's worth mentioning. The other thing that I think is worth mentioning with the protein too is, are you getting some harmful ingredients in it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I wanted to bring this up too, because a lot of people think like, well, if I'm not going to take whey protein, then what about some of the vegan and vegetarian options out there? And I've actually read that I don't know if you know this to be true, and I don't have a scientific source to put out there. I could find one and put it on the show notes. But I've actually heard that a lot of the vegetarian and vegan protein powders that are out there actually have a higher level of metal content.
Yeah, I've heard that. And I've also heard that they have a much higher probability of having like mycotoxins or potentially mold in them.
Yeah. And that's a hard thing to deal with. And for the average person, this metal toxicity, you're not going to notice it right off the bat. It's probably not going to, unless you're pregnant. If you are pregnant, one thing I've always done is I've kept pregnant women away from any sort of vegetarian protein powders or things like that, because of this metal toxicity. But the problem with this is that these metals tend to build up over time and in your system. And what can happen in those cases?
So what can happen in those cases is you're going to have trouble thinking clearly. You're going to have trouble focusing. Some of your nerve function could get damaged. And you wouldn't notice that right away. It would be kind of a slow burn. In addition to that too, your hormonal issues can kind of, I would say, get augmented as well. A lot of people will find, like, whether it's from protein powder or whether it's from toxic load from personal care items like soaps or deodorants, that you're going to absorb that through your skin or what you call transdermally. And at that point, you might cause a lot of estrogen fluctuations as well.
Yeah. And if you're taking something in that is constantly putting you into an allergic state, that's also causing releases of cortisol, right? And if you're producing cortisol en masse on top of the other stresses that you're getting, that can also cause what they call a pregnenolone steal. And people don't, when we think of testosterone, right? Testosterone has different precursors. So you have DHEA, you have pregnenolone, and pregnenolone is known as the mother of all hormones, and it produces not only testosterone, but it also helps produce estrogen and it helps reduce cortisol. So if you begin overproducing cortisol, meaning your body's in a constant state of stress, it's in a constant state of fear, your pregnenolone supply can get depleted, and that leads to more cortisol production and a drop in testosterone. And a major reason why we see a lot of testosterone deficiencies actually has to do with chronic stress. Of course, there's other things like Leydig cell failure in the testicles and things like that. But we see a huge drop in testosterone because of chronic stress. And we think of stress as something like, okay, well, my boss is constantly on me, or I'm constantly worried about my relationship with my wife and things like that. But there's also a lot of different types of environmental stressors out there that can seriously impact your hormonal health in this way.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of these are sort of silent killers that a lot of people don't know about. It's like a slow acting poison. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And just kind of builds up in your system over time. So when we think about protein powder, so you talked earlier about collagen protein as being a better way of going about things. What, in your mind, are any of the new collagen protein powders that are coming out, are they safe from this type of metal toxicity?
From what I've seen, yes. The caveat is that with them or any supplement, you want to make sure that on the label, there's some sort of, you know, I'm pointing at my coffee as an example, but see how there's like a certification for recycling right there? Mm-hmm. You want to look for something like that, that basically shows that the supplement has been regulated by a third party and been lab validated for safety, quality of sourcing, and then also so that what's on the label actually is in there and validated. It's almost like how you would not eat at a restaurant that was failing its health inspections.
And would that come back on the certificate of analysis if there is a lot of metal toxicity in there?
Yes, absolutely. Those of you who have friends in the local science departments at local colleges, maybe you could send, you know, if you were really curious and really wanted to get nerdy with it, you could actually send off a small sample of your preferred protein powder and you could test that. And they actually would send you back the results from the lot numbers. One thing that was cool when I was working in my time with Nutrition by M2 or formerly Max Muscle, every single lot number could be sent into the company and then they would send you batch results from testing third party, which I thought was cool for a supplement company, especially one that's mainly in the fitness industry.
Yeah. And you want to look for supplement companies that'll provide you with the certificate of analysis if you ask about it too. I know that certain companies out there will definitely send you the certificate of analysis talking about what's in their product. And if they're, particularly if they're a good company, have you encountered a lot of companies like that?
No, I would say by and large, probably 90% of the industry is bunk. And that's a completely arbitrary number that I pulled out of my ass. But you basically want to be a conspiracy theorist in a way. And I don't mean waste time, you know, coming up with these wild conjectures. I mean, you want to guilty until proven innocent. And you really see proven innocence through the third party labeling. And that's about as good as you're going to do since the government doesn't regulate these things. And even if the government, you know, the FDA did, I wouldn't exactly trust it fully anyways, because you never know if there's a corporate interest there.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think that when we're out there and we're consumers, right? And I think that the tendency amongst most people is to look at who's using the product, right? And to actually try to see what athletes are using the product, what they're doing with it. And the thing is, that's the way I thought actually until I actually got into the fitness industry. And then I would go and I would visit pro bodybuilders and they'd have cabinets full, like in their attic, cabinets full of protein from the company that they were being sponsored by. And I'd be like, well, are you using any of that stuff? And they'd be like, fuck no, I'm not using this stuff. Hell no, I'm not using that stuff. I'm using other stuff. But I keep the product on hand because they're a good sponsor and I tell everybody I'm using it. And that's pretty much the industry that exists out there. You can't just go off of who you think is using the product because you don't know who is actually using the product. You know, if you want to look for good, open, transparency in what's in the product and its effectiveness for you, it's really hard to do that. There's certain companies out there that I know are actually, pretty decent. You know, I love, Primal Kitchen, and what Mark Sisson's done with collagen fuel. I think that, you know, we've also got Thorn Nutraceuticals up there. They have some pretty transparent practices in what they're putting out. But by and large, you've got to be really careful about what you're putting in your body if you're going with a lot of these commercial supplements, because these are things that can lead to some major impact, not necessarily when you're 18, 19 years old, but when you get up to be my age,
38 years old, you start to feel a lot of this stuff. You start to feel the cognitive impact of those mycotoxins, and you start to feel, for me personally, the autoimmune symptoms. If you've got an autoimmune disease in your genetic makeup, you know, it makes these things a lot more likely to come out.
Yeah, you definitely can find a lot of like these symptoms teased out over time. And the more in tune you are with your body, the better you're able to decipher it. You know, if you're taking protein powder, for example, and something as simple as chronic farting, I mean, it probably means that that's not a good sign, as innocent as something like a fart could seem to be on paper. And then eventually, you know, you might find, okay, well, now I'm getting a little bit more acne, or weight, you know, I'm bloating, you know, there's some water retention there. These are just some simple ways to, without kind of doing under the hood self-quantification like labs, these are some simple ways for you to test yourself.
Yeah. And, you know, it's about understanding what those signs were, because, you know, back when I was a bodybuilder, I'd be sitting there farting up a storm. And I'm not just talking about normal farting. I'm talking about like running to the bathroom, getting on the toilet, and having a fart that's so big it actually lifts you up the toilet seat kind of friggin' stuff.
Impact fart.
Yeah, dude. Like actual liftoff. And like, and not to get too gross about things, but that's the kind of stuff that I was like, all right, well, this is the price to pay for getting huge. This is the price to pay for putting on muscle and being athletic. And the thing is, none of that's actually helping. So let's get into what actually is in collagen protein that can help you out. And do you necessarily need to take a collagen protein powder in order to get this stuff, right? So as Matt said, collagen protein is probably the most abundant protein in our bodies, right? It helps our skin, it helps our joints, but it also helps in healing and lining the intestinal tract. And as I said before, in your intestinal lining, you have little spaces in there. And these little spaces are where you start to absorb nutrition. Those are called enterocytes. And what happens there is if your body starts to become inflamed and your gut starts to become inflamed, the area around those enterocytes starts to swell up. And then because it swells up, then those openings start to spread out and things become very, very thin. Now, your intestinal tract also contains your immune system. And if those sites become so thin that they become permeable, and food particles actually start to get out in your immune system, that can lead to a whole host of really bad issues. They call it leaky gut syndrome, and that can lead your immune system to begin to overreact. And that's where you start to get things like IBS, IBD, other autoimmune problems. You start to get neurological disorders. You can start to get brain fog. It can seriously start to mess with your total body chronic inflammation, joint pain, all types of different things can happen from that. But the cool thing about collagen is that it's got a couple of different things in there that are really going to help your intestinal tract out. Two big amino acids found in abundance, and that's one, glycine. Glycine actually helps with stomach acid production. A lot of people think when they're thinking about stomach acid, they think, well, doesn't that lead to indigestion? And normally, a lot of people are kind of brainwashed into thinking that they need to take an antacid and all these types of things. But indigestion and GERD, they usually happen because you're not producing enough stomach acid. And number two, L-glutamine, which, like I said before, is really helpful in rebuilding that lining in the gut. Matt, so when we think about these collagen protein powders, what are the best sources, or not the best sources, but what are the best ways for people to take these?
So I actually recommend taking it daily or almost daily. And I recommend them taking it with a meal. You really do not need to time it with a workout, and you're looking at only doing, you know, in this case, like 1 to 2 scoops at a time. And if this, are we putting up a video of this or just audio?
Oh yeah, it's going to be a video.
If you want, I'll go grab a sample scoop size so people can see.
Yeah, dude. Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, the thing is too, it's not just protein powder that you can get this from. A really big thing is also bone broth. And we'll talk about how to make that in a second. We also got a really awesome recipe for bone broth up in the free cookbook that we put out with Warrior Soul, the Warrior Soul Keto Camp newsletter. So if you want to check that out. So it's a real small scoop, right?
Yeah, you can see, I mean, gram wise, that is, you know, the better part of 7 grams is scooper size. Most protein powders are about 30 to 35 grams. And functionally, if you're just doing like an actual level scoop, that's 15 milliliters. So, well, I mean, this is like maybe 2 to 3 tablespoons, basically. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the brands that I like, you know, no vested interest, Collagen MD.
Oh, nice.
Type 1 and 3. I also am a big fan of, and again, no vested interest, Great Lakes Collagen Hydrosylate. And this is something where if you wanted to basically get hooked up with this or any other supplements we're talking about today, you can actually email Coop, C-O-O-P, at the number 12amlabs.com. After this, again, that's Coop at 12amlabs.com, and we can give you a personalized health and fitness consult with supplement recommendations. And if you do that, you'll get all your supplements even below Amazon pricing.
Yeah, we can get that up on the show notes too. You know, and so we have collagen protein powders that you can take. You can take collagen. There's other sources out there of collagen as well. And one of the biggest ones is bone broth. And like I said, we have a recipe for it in the free cookbook that we give away with the Warrior Soul newsletter. But, you know, if you're really thinking about just getting down and dirty with it, you basically take either a whole chicken carcass or you get some beef bones, beef marrow bones. You stick those into a crock pot, slice up some onions, some carrots, some celery. You stick those in there as well. And then you cook it for 12 to 15 hours. And afterwards, you get all of that awesome collagen that was in those bones that seeps into the broth. And, right. I like to make a pot of that each week. I've also been getting these portable packages of bone broth from Kettle and Fire. Those are a little bit more expensive. But basically what I'll do is if I'm pressed for time or something like that and I haven't made my own bone broth, what I'll do is I'll just take some bone broth, I'll stick it into a coffee cup, and I'll sit here in the morning while I'm doing my writing or if I'm doing some work, and I'll sip on that bone broth. And that really, really helps. If you're following any of the gut health diets, you know, bone broth is a really big staple for them. So, really great source of collagen there. Now, for those of you out, because there's a lot of people out there who are veterans, they're either in the military serving actively right now, or they're getting into their post-military lives. And, you know, you've been beating your body up. If you're an infantryman in the Marine Corps or the Army, you're constantly beating your body up. You're constantly messing with your body as far as the joints, as far as like your gut health, even, because you're sticking MREs into your system. Those are really, really hard to digest. You know, by the end of all that, you can end up in some serious health issues. And, you know, what we're seeing with the veteran community these days, and we're looking at the stats, you know, 1 in 4 veterans who's admitted to the VA suffers from diabetes, meaning that they have, they're insulin resistant. They're not able to process carbohydrate properly. We see so many people with bad backs, with bad joints, not able to walk, and they're only in their mid 30s. So for those of you who are still serving and those of you who are just getting out, bone broth and collagen are probably phenomenal sources for you to really help you to recover from the impact that you've been experiencing on your bodies. They're actually really, really tasty. I love drinking bone broth. So that's a big thing that you guys can do. There's other collagen protein bars out there. Have you had any experience with those, Matt?
Yeah. Again, no vested interest, but I'm a huge fan of the Bulletproof bars and Mark Sisson's Primal Blueprint bars. To me, the Bulletproof bars are the best tasting bar on the market. Mm-hmm. They almost taste like a melted, half melted ice cream bar, and great quality collagen in both cases. You know, you're using this collagen actually from the supplement. It's not like traditional protein bars that are like whey based, where the protein source that you're getting is probably about the cheapest non-digestible protein possible. One company that I'm thinking of rhymes with West, and they're very popular. So yeah, great quality there. You know, it's a little bit more costly per serving, but if you know, if you want to kill two birds with one stone and you like having the snack in there, want more fiber, and maybe prefer eating something to taking a shake, you could just do that as your collagen source for protein. And yeah, you know, I don't want us to outsmart ourselves either. Next time, you know, if you're eating some free range chicken thigh, like that chewy part, you know, go ahead and eat that. It's good for you.
Yeah, if you're going to, I love pho, right?
There you go.
Noodles. And so they make it in this awesome broth. But if you're going to get pho, the best part of it is the ligaments and the tendons that they put in with the meat. And I know a lot of people think that's gross, but they actually taste pretty good. The texture really isn't that bad. And those are absolutely phenomenal for you. The nasty bits that we don't eat anymore. And that's another big thing to bring up. You know, I come from an Italian background. My family was immigrants. We always ate things like organ meats, and we would eat things like cartilage, and we would eat things, break the bone apart and suck the marrow out from the inside of it. And you don't see people do that anymore. We're in the fillet era, I guess you can say, where people don't like bones with their meat. They don't like, they just want everything to be easy sliced, easy to chew. But if you go to other countries, people actually eat the marrow. They actually eat the cartilage. And that's so helpful for you as far as getting a good source of collagen that's going to help your skin, help your gut, help your joints, and help you to be an overall healthier person. So those are definitely things that I recommend. And back to the bars, I really do. I think that both the Bulletproof and the Primal Kitchen are tasty. I like that Bulletproof doesn't have nuts in it. The one thing I don't like about the Primal Kitchen bars are that they have so many nuts. And for someone like me with digestive issues, they can screw me up pretty bad. So as far as everything goes, so just to recap, we talked about protein powder, we talked about whey, we talked about vegetable protein sources, and we talked about collagen protein. Now I want to move on to an article that Matt just put out about the McGregor-Mayweather fight. McGregor gassed pretty bad, and not to take nothing away from him, I think he did awesome. I think that he came out strong. He did better than I thought he was going to do, and I admire him so much as an athlete. But he also seemed to gas toward the end of the fight, and it seemed like he lost that energy. He wasn't carrying the coordination that he had before. So, Matt, you just wrote an article on this, and what's the misconceptions that people have about why McGregor gassed, and what are your takeaways from the fight?
First thing first, I just want to say it was a good fight. I actually thought that fight was better than a lot of the boxing opponents Mayweather's had.
Yep, big time.
I mean, granted, he is 40, he's coming off of a 2-year layaway, but still, I mean, even with that, it's the experience level. You know, you're facing someone who has experience in combat sports, but zero in boxing. You know, I think both camps walked away from it looking good. You know, Floyd is 50-0. Afterwards, they were both really respectful. And then you have McGregor who no one can really criticize him in that fight really for stepping up. And let's be honest too, like, let's just give someone props for making a big time dent in the universe.
Absolutely. 100%. I think that's he did something that nobody else would have tried. Nobody else would have ever thought to do. You know, and he's got balls. He's got big ass balls. So,
yeah. I mean, you know, I would get in the ring with Mayweather for that amount of money. I don't really care if he tees off on my nuts for a whole round. Like, I think there's a lot of people like that, but to do it to the degree that McGregor did it, taking it seriously and at that level, achieving what he achieved and hanging in there, I mean, props, you know. I think The Rock said it best. You know, he said, you know, just got to give credit to someone making a big time dent in the universe. You know, he's another example of that, who sort of has crossed over into a lot of mediums and done some things. So the big misconception, though, is everybody afterwards was saying he gassed, which is true, but they were saying, oh, he has bad cardio. And for someone who in MMA, someone who's a top level athlete in a sport that involves like an aerobic base, you know, you may not be a triathlete, but his aerobic system, or what most people call cardio, or the cardiac system, is fine. You know, if he was to go out and then run miles, he would be just fine. Mm-hmm. But when you look at MMA, you're looking at a sport that requires a lot of muscular endurance. Because what is MMA? It's a series of very lightning fast, explosive power movements, meaning velocity, not power as in like, oh, it's strength. Like, I mean, literally the definition of power. So not only moving, you know, your force, but moving it fast, right? So essentially it's a lot of those movements spread out over a period of time. So really that is a system I felt that could have been a major limiting factor. And so what I did was I actually broke it down and said, all right, well, what goes into performing optimally, and why would an athlete actually potentially break down? And so there's actually a video, perhaps we can link to it in the show notes, that I did that literally talks about, I think, just about every system you could think of, other than I maybe skipped over one or two, why someone would, in his position, gas in a fight like that, and how it probably has nothing to do with his aerobic system.
Mm. That's very true. I think that, you know, a lot of people don't understand this, getting into a ring and actually facing combat with another person, who, you know, any of you who've ever been high school wrestlers and any of you who do jiu-jitsu, it's a very, very different state than going outside and running or doing Tabata exercises. Even it's active muscular, stress from the beginning. Like when you're rolling with somebody, when you're grappling with somebody, it's stress from the beginning. Boxing is a little bit different because you're constantly on the protection. You're constantly trying to jab, constantly trying to outwit your opponent at the same time as hit them. I think that, you know, this is a big testament to, specificity in training, right?
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
When you're talking about things that and whether or not they translate, yeah, sure, go out for your run, go out and do that, but is that going to be specific in preparing you for what you're training for at the end of the day? And I think that there's always been this emphasis in certain sports that say, you know, you have to go out and you have to do a 5-mile run every single day. Then you come back and you have to hit the bag for 5 hours and do that. And then you spar a little bit and things like that. But I think the thing is, when we're talking about training for something like this, there has to be specificity. You have to have an opponent that you're going to be facing in the gym that's going to provide that type of resistance for you that you're going to be facing out there. And the same thing goes for you guys out there who may be training to go into the military, or who are trying to get better at your jobs in the military. Running in a shorts and a t-shirt is not going to prepare you for that 20-mile hump with 100 pounds on your back. The only thing that's going to prepare you for that is actually doing loaded carries and doing marches in full load. The thing you have to worry about in those situations, though, is, are you overtraining and are you overtaxing your central nervous system? And is that causing a negative effect on anything that you're doing? And Matt, you know, when we're talking about stuff like this, we're talking about training frequency, in your mind, knowing what we know now, what types of training frequency would you recommend for something like that?
So training frequency, you're saying for aerobics, or are you saying for...
For something like this, where we're talking about something that has such training specificity required.
Yeah. So let me just show you something, you and everyone at home. See this?
You've solved a Rubik's Cube.
So I'm using this as a metaphor.
Okay, gotcha.
So I'll let you guys wonder whether I solved this or whether this is just bought out of the package. I solved it, maybe. But actually, it's a gift from my girlfriend, which is very nice of her. But I'm using it because with MMA or CrossFit, from a strength and conditioning perspective, my friend Aaron Davis of Train Adaptive All likened it to a Rubik's Cube. And I love that because here you have two rare sports where, more so than any other sports, you're using a crossover of different systems of aerobic system. You need maximal strength. So how much weight literally can you just get up? You need speed strength, right? So I'm going to throw a right cross. How fast can I throw that and with how much force at the same time? You need just general speed. You actually need your sprint system, you know, your phosphagen system, because, you know, you're blitzing someone. And in addition to that, you know, you're using a muscular endurance. You're using a variety of systems. And so it's almost like a Rubik's Cube. Like, how do you program that? Because since you need all of these things at one time, you can't do the typical NSCA, CSCS, or NASM year-long program where you're like periodizing someone for a year. Because oftentimes with fighters or people, you're getting them, you know, oh, I have 8 weeks, I have 12 weeks, if you're lucky, 16 weeks. How do I just take what's already there and instead of abandon, I need to adapt? Okay, well, this guy's got a great aerobic base, so we can focus a little bit less on that. But guess what? He's weak as fuck. So we're, you know, if he's like a submission guy, he's going to need to make sure that he has that maximal strength. So we need to shore up those strength deficits. Mm-hmm. Whereas if he's a guy who's maybe strong and has good cardio, but he has like no speed in his punches or anything like that, we need to maybe have him lay off some of the heavier weightlifting and do stuff that's maybe going to more train his motor skills and his coordination and get that back. So I guess what I'm saying is, it's going to depend on where they're at, but for aerobics, really, like if they're already doing MMA practice, they're going to get a lot of that cardio training there. So I really think maybe just doing, you know, 2 to 3 days of strength training per week in that case, assuming they're already doing probably 3 to 5 MMA sessions. And then on top of that, you're figuring they're maybe doing a couple aerobic sessions as well. It's really a careful balance.
Mm-hmm. So do you think it goes back to like Zatsiorsky and getting your conditioning from the sport you're practicing while focusing on strength? You think that's the main thing?
I think so. I think that's the main thing. And what I like to do with people is maybe occasionally you kind of overreach them a little bit. Maybe have somebody do like a complex and then just tax the shit out of their nervous system and then have them spar to kind of have them feel what that like feels like. Maybe have them do a simulation of, you know, a true 5 round with maybe more intense sparring here and there. Have them overreach a little bit, but by and large, you're right. I think specificity of training for conditioning is best. And then if I want to dial up their aerobic system a little more, I'll actually have them hop on the Concept 2 rowing machine, which I think that's the best piece of, you know, cardio equipment there is. And it's such a big hit on the nervous system. I may only need like 20 minutes with them to accomplish what I need to accomplish. Big time challenge for everybody at home who wants to just get a really big aerobic system. And props to Nick Kersan, one of my mentors for this as well, is stay on the rower for 20 minutes. And at the end of that, I want you to try to have the rower read as close to 350 calories as possible.
That's brutal.
And it's not because the calories are necessarily accurate. It's because you have to keep a high fucking intensity to get
there. Yeah, I've rowed for calories before, and that's pretty brutal. You feel like ass after that. And that's something that's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
I tend to opt for complexes, and not just barbell complexes, but when I'm talking about complexes, guys, I'm talking about, you know, doing one exercises back to back to back with a specific implement. So I'll do barbell complexes, and a typical barbell complex will be like a squat clean to a front squat to an overhead press to a back squat, and then back over into bringing the barbell to your waist. And that's what you call a bear complex. But I'll also do them with sandbags, and I'll do them with kettlebells, and I'll do them with things like that. And I find that that translates really well to having more endurance during jiu-jitsu practice, because it adds this kind of strength endurance element to it. And I can redline quite a bit doing complexes. I mean, I've been more tired doing complexes than I've been doing, you know, typical CrossFit wads and things like that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think it also, again, if you dial in what the movements are, you can actually get some sport specific things on there. You know, you can use a sandbag, like a suplex, if you will. They actually have suplex bags too. Or you can do some body weight stuff, you know, that might mimic sprawling, things like that too. But there's just a lot to it. And so what you want to do is like take someone from their get-go, and then you want to look at them and say, all right, well, do they have any strength deficits? Meaning, can they just lift maximal loads to a certain threshold? Are they good to go there? You know, is their aerobic system a limiting factor? Okay. Or is it strength endurance? And you also need to look at their game too. You know what I mean? I'll give you an example. If you're someone like Conor McGregor, who's sort of a rangy striker, who has some ground skills, that's going to be a different game than if you're working with a heavyweight like Alistair Overeem, who likes to kind of like use his length at a distance to hurt you, and then likes to get in close when, you know, he's opportunistic, get in close when he can, pin you against the fence, and then kind of brutalize you from the clinch. So you need to look at someone's game too. And I think that's why in MMA, it's a whole nother ball game. And so I think you kind of need to make sure you're developing all of these systems at one time, and maybe just oscillating more to strength for a period, aerobic, depending on what's needed. And then make sure you still have elements of the others in there.
I think you also have to look at the specificity of the strength program as well, and the types of exercises you're utilizing. You know, for example, a lot of people utilize the back squat, which is a phenomenal exercise, but does that translate as well as like a front squat or an overhead squat is going to? What about a Zercher squat? You know, the different types of variations that you can do. And I think that if you're going to periodize over that period, I think you should periodize with the variations in those base strength movements that you're doing. You know, and a lot like what Louis Simmons out of Westside Barbell would do, you know, switch up between utilizing a back squat or a front squat every couple of weeks, and switching those workouts up to ensure that you don't have any basic holes in your strength.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And speaking of that, I think it might be a good time to pivot to just list off a few different systems to look at when an athlete like Conor McGregor gasses. Mm-hmm. If that's all right with you.
Yeah, let's go, man.
So Joe Rogan talked about a few of them. I'll mention that as well. There's always a chance with any athlete coming into a sport that they maybe over prepare a little bit, and their immune system's compromised, and they get a little bit ill, even if it's just something simple like a mild cold, right? So I think that's a factor that gets overlooked a lot. Another one too is allostatic overload. So what is your life load like? And this one no one talks about. It's like, what? We all know Conor McGregor is an entrepreneur. He's not just a fighter. He's an entrepreneur. He's promoting his own like fitness cardio system now. Conor McGregor has become like The Rock in a way. He is his own brand, and it stretches in a lot of areas. So when it comes to meetings, keeping up appearances and all of that, like how much of that took a toll on him, and how much was he stressed about all of that too? And was something going on in his personal life?
Yeah, dude, all of that takes a toll, and people don't realize that if you are stressed in your personal life, if you are having a crazy time at work, if you are also expecting to roll jiu-jitsu and kill everybody and tap people, then you know, your system overloads. Your brain can only handle so much. And you have to remember that that's the real nerve center up there. And your hormones, I mean, they can definitely be sent into haywire through a couple of different pathways.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that, you know, basically there's, I put a little graph on there, but it's essentially like there's feedback mechanisms too. And part of that is that downstream from this, you'll have a deficit in your neurotransmitters like dopamine, serotonin, acetylcholine, things like that, aka elements of who we are as people. And a lot of people, like, you'll see if so they're preparing for a big thing, like a big work event or an athletic event, they almost feel like they're not themselves and they can't wait for the event to be over later on. And it's because they've been overreaching for so much, whether it's, well, it can happen through just overtraining. We'll get to that in a sec though, or whether it's for this allostatic overload, that they feel less like themselves because literally there's less neurochemistry to go around. Because, you know, if you're that stressed, your body's allocating all of that energy towards that fight or flight response.
Yeah, I've definitely been there. been there with everything we do with business, with podcast, everything I do with training. I have definitely been there, and I've definitely been in situations where I'm saying something, but it's not really me saying it. And it's not, you know, I'll start to stumble over my words. I'll start to, you know, react with fear out of nowhere. And those things have happened to me. And what Matt's saying is definitely something that I think happens to a lot of people on a regular basis.
Yeah, athletes or professionals, you know. I also think we covered it a little bit, but muscular endurance, like, I've just seen so much bad strength and conditioning at the highest level. I don't know Connor's coach or what he does, so I'm not saying this is the case. But you have to wonder, like, how did he, you know, they dial him in? Did they just say, oh, go on a run and call it good, you know, for cardio? Like, was that their main source of cardio? Or did they actually try to target muscular endurance and then make sure that, you know, in his muscles, they were able to actually go at it for prolonged periods of time? So moving on, I also think that the motor skill side of things too, you know what I mean? Like, he hasn't had to do a pure boxing match for that long. And then also, was there like a sensory motor limitation there because he's used to a similar sport? And I mentioned this in the video. It's not like you told LeBron James or Steph Curry to go out and hit a home run. They might think about it because they're not used to it. And so they might in that way psych themselves out, but it's not a similar sport at all. So there's not going to be a carryover issue, but, you know, was there a chance that McGregor's like, was kind of like maybe reacting and almost twitching his hips like he was about to check a leg kick or look out for a takedown? Because, you know, he obviously has boxed before, but he's never been like with the day of competition nerves in a situation where he's pure boxing. So was there any limiting factors there where he was like wondering like, oh shit, this is, you know, instinctive defenses, like where he's normally trained to not even consciously react to block a leg kick or to look out for a takedown or look out for a body kick? And I think that that is something no one's really looked at too. And that can kind of, you know, tax someone as well.
Well, we did see those hammer fists quite a bit. You know, and every time Mayweather would turn or anything like that, it seemed like McGregor was almost automatically going to a hammer fist. You know, it definitely speaks to your argument, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I also think too, again, another one as well is the overtraining factor. And so just like with allostatic overload, if you find someone has been overtraining for a while, it's not dissimilar to if the body was actually going under an attack. And so if you look at what you call autonomics, or basically different states of your nervous system, you have sympathetic or a stress response. That's what happens when you're literally stressed, running from an attacker, bears chasing you, or you're working out. So there are good uses for it, right? If you're getting attacked or when you actually, you know, need a good stress, like during training. But you want to make sure that you can detox from that. And then most of the time you're in this parasympathetic state, which is where you're more just relaxed, breathing and paying attention to the world around you. So if you're always overtraining, your body is shifted more into that stress response state. And so if all of your resources there are allocated towards that stress response and defense, there's a good chance that you're going to have downstream issues from that, such as, you know, less requisite hormone production. Mm-hmm. Maybe something as simple as your muscles aren't getting a chance to recover adequately. And eventually at the very tip of that iceberg, you'll find, or I guess it shouldn't be bottom. Eventually at the, you know, the furthest stream, furthest puddle is going to be not enough. Again, neurochemistry, dopamine, serotonin, elements of who we are left over for you to actually allocate that for yourself. So I think that there's always a chance with MMA and any big time athletic event that you over prepare and no one really like looked at that. And I'll give you an example. Chris and I actually did a reading on a device called an Omega Wave. And that actually is something that can measure states of your nervous system and cardiac system. Is there, I don't know if you still have that video, but that might be helpful to post.
Yeah, I'll post that in the show notes, actually.
Yeah, yeah. We could share it separately and in the show notes. But anything to add to overtraining?
Yeah, everybody, a few years ago, you know, you're a trainer at Metroflex right now. I worked at Metroflex for years and founded the place along with Eddie. One of the worst things I think that ever came out of it was the idea. And I don't think that this is what CT or Mike or anybody was saying in the first place was, but that was that overtraining doesn't exist. And what I think they were talking about was looking at overtraining in a completely different capacity. But I think that if you are somebody who has an active lifestyle, who is constantly on the go, if you're constantly working, if you're constantly trying to you know, put things out in this world, and that's understandable. And I believe in this, and I believe in trying to make your life as better as possible or as good as possible. And I believe in trying to ensure that you are putting things out in the world. But I think that the problem is that a lot of us are expecting too much of ourselves, and that at some point in the whole chain of things, from our brain to our bodies, something's going to break down. And that could be your hormones, that could be your intestinal health, it could be your joints. But in that whole chain of events that happens, because of the constant stress of your body, something's going to break down. And I can't say what that is. And I can't say, you know, what it might be for you. I know what it's been for me. It's been my gut health. It's been ulcerative colitis flare-ups. It's been, you know, not being able to focus and concentrate on different types of things. It's been jumbling my words during this podcast, but you know, I can feel it right now at this moment. But at some point,
words are there, but they can't come out.
Right. Right. And at some point you're giving something up. And, I think that, you know, what you have to tell yourself is a couple of different things. Number one, you've got time. Right. Most of the people listening to this podcast are not pro fighters. Most of the people who are listening to this podcast are veterans or service members. Right. And so what I would say to you is that the primary concern is not performing when you're in garrison. It's not performing when you're in training. The primary concern is when you're out there in combat. And you're actually dealing with things and you're actually dealing with real life situations. I think that what you need to do is really take care of yourself through nutrition, through supplementation, and ensuring that you are protecting yourself from all the things that are coming up. Because when you're on a workup, for example, with the military, you don't have time not to train. You can't not train. You know, you've got to train. But you have to make sure that you're getting those base nutrients in, because the MREs aren't going to do it for you. So, you know, including base supplements like omega-3 fatty acids in there that are going to help you to reduce total body chronic inflammation, including, you know, base nutrients in there, you know, from like a greens drink or something like that. Doing those little things could actually help you with greater longevity. And I think I was just all over the place on that question.
But you know, the various bases needed to be covered. But no, I hear you. And you know, ultimately, I think not being able to show up as yourself in your own life day to day is the biggest thing you're robbing yourself of, more than performance, more than any facet of health, although that's up there. So something to pay attention to when you're overreaching, whether it's in the gym or in life. Now, a couple other things I wanted to talk about. Real simple here. Respiratory limitation. It looked like he was breathing kind of funky to me. I think he could have benefited from doing some of that Brian McKenzie work where you're doing some cadence breathing in your nose. And then also just diaphragm breathing, simple diaphragm breathing. Like, he didn't look like he was breathing into his belly to me. It looked like shallow chest breathing. It looked like it was like, you know, mouth open, kind of like half nasal, half otherwise, you know, compromising the immune system, everything. So definitely a respiratory limitation there. Some of that breathing cadence work could have helped. I definitely think doing a training mask could have helped too. And as Brian McKenzie would say, not because it at all mimics altitude, but because it actually can coordinate your breathing and thus also activate your nervous system a little bit better. So food for thought there. In addition, we got to talk about circadian imbalance. So did he might actually live in Las Vegas. I'm not sure. He probably has more than one house, but did he travel and not have a big turnaround time? Did he get used to his new sleep cycles? Because Rob Wolf actually talked about this on the Joe Rogan podcast way back when, and there's a lot more research on it now for chronobiology. And that's that you'll see these fighters who come over from different parts of the world or even different states. And then they basically, their performance is compromised when they're actually fighting because their body's not used to the new sleep system, meaning sleep cycle in the new time zone. So it's big when you see the Asian fighters come over from Japan. So in addition to that, so we don't know that. Another thing too is lactate threshold. So if you look at the old, like the triphasic training, Cal Beats kind of stuff, he talks about this a lot, but what is his lactate load tolerance like? Like, is he training in such a way to actually train his ability to tolerate high amounts of lactic acid in his body and then still perform through that? So another thing we don't really know about. Another big one too is diet. You know, was he eating a diet that maybe detrained his ability to do one thing or another? And by that, I mean, if he was eating meals too frequently and maybe eating just an abundance of carbohydrates, even if he might need a higher carb diet at periods during training camp, and even though maybe eating a little bit more often could be okay for performance during training camp, the rest of the year, you know, is he training his body to use his, like, own existing fat for energy? Because again, MMA, with all sports, there's an overlap, but especially with MMA, you're using different energy systems at the same time. So how well was he not only developing those through training, but also through nutrition?
Yeah, that's definitely a case. And you know, it's hard to say that though, because you know, unless you actually know what kind of blood work he's got going for him, what types of deficiencies he might have and things like that, it's hard to say what could be causing that. And a lot of people would like to point and say, oh, well, if he tried the ketogenic diet, or if he tried this diet, or if he tried that diet, he might not gas out. But again, we don't know his internal body chemistry, and we don't know what he's working with.
Yeah, exactly. And we won't know, to be honest with you. We really won't know. We'll look at his meals and we can deduce a lot from that. But we really don't know if he has a mineral deficit somewhere.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. So
I hope that, you know, again, just painted a picture not only of why he might have gassed, but for you. Like, why, not you personally, Chris, but everybody at home, why is your performance off? Or why are you maybe not feeling like yourself? Why are you not getting the results that you think you should get in spite of all of this effort, right? So these are just different trees to bark up to optimize, to fuel your own performance. And I hope that I kind of inspired some thought there and just tried to start a discussion.
That's awesome. And we'll include a link to the article in the show notes. And that's very true. You know, I think that so many people out there, they're concerned with going to the gym, with following a particular kind of diet or anything like that. But what few people realize is that the work you put in the gym it's not going to be effective if there's some sort of broken chain in your body. And it could actually be detrimental to you if there's a broken pathway or one of these vital processes that keeps you is screwed up. And then the other thing is this, rather than being concerned with what kind of diet you're following, you know, whether it's ketogenic, whether it's bodybuilding, whether it's anything, be more concerned about the actual nutrients you're putting into your body and whether or not they're digestible and whether or not you can utilize them. And that's something I always say. Of course, Matt and I talk about the ketogenic all the time, ketogenic diet all the time. We run a freaking course called Warrior Soul Keto Camp, for God's sakes. But the keto diet might not be what works for you. And even if you are following a keto diet, if it's not nutrient dense and it's not digestible, then you're going to be running into problems. So keep those things in mind. And then I think we've covered over an hour right now, brother. So time to sign off.
I want to recap though, just so people can know for the different things. So real quick, we'll put up the link to the Conor McGregor video if you want to watch it. And then if you have any questions, just go ahead and comment on the YouTube video itself, or you can email info@warriorsoulapparel.com if you want to ask Chris anything. If you want to ask me anything, it's going to be Coop, COOP, at 12amlabs.com. That's the number 12amlabs.com. We're also going to put up a link to for the supplements as well. If you want us to review your supplements to see if they're fake or they're not fake, if you're even taking the right stuff, or maybe you should be like eliminating something, taking something, same thing. Free consult, hit up Coop at 12amlabs.com. I'm more than happy to look at that and provide you with a resource where you can get everything you need for cheaper than what you're getting it now.
Awesome. Awesome. All right, brother.
Well, all right, guys. Thanks.
To everybody out there, thank you for listening to this episode of Warrior Health Talk. And if you're looking for anything that we mentioned on the show, you'll be able to find it on the show notes under podcasts at warriorsoulagoji.com. We'll be back at you next Wednesday with another awesome episode, and we will both talk to you soon.